talk with candidate for the 1st District Congressional seat, Kevin Hearn. Kevin, good morning. Thank you very much for calling in.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you today?
It's a good day in the neighborhood. Like I said, with a forecasted high of only around 93 compared to the 98 or whatever it could have been, I'll take 98 or 93 degrees instead of 98 or 99. How about you?
Absolutely. It's great to see the rain today.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, any amount of rain, I think, is appreciated just because it's refreshing. Even the 7100s, and I don't know, your backyard range gauge might have gotten more or less. Kevin, again, one of the reasons that you and I are talking this morning, when somebody might say, well, the election is not until November of next year, that is, at this point in time, a true statement, but it is still a possibility that Jim Bridenstine could be selected for a NASA job, and if that were to come to pass, then you and any other candidates announced or so far unannounced would have somewhere around 2 months to get ready for a primary. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, Congressman Bridenstine has been talked about for a number of months now, actually all the way back to the election last year, about taking a position in the administration somewhere. The latest being last 6 months is that he would be heading up NASA, and there's nothing been out there that's deterred that, other than just the president making the actual appointment. As we all know, there are many appointments that need to be made, and there's no shortage of consternation in D.C. right now, so I'm not sure. I'm sure the Bridenstine organization would love to know that date more so than anyone.
I'm sure that they would, and I feel for them if they are either expecting or hoping for some kind of announcement, yay or nay, on that. Either way, I'm sure just like to get it out of the way and either have the job or know that they don't have a job. But even on the news today, we just a few moments ago talking about the call for civility from Senator McCain, and getting, you know, kind of my words, not his, can't we all get along? But the Republicans and Democrats more or less haven't gotten along in Congress for several terms anyway.
Yeah, you know, I think if you go back through history, I think it's just the more evident because we have so many media outlets that are always trying to find a fight because that sells news.
But, sure.
You know, that's historical. That's all the way back to the beginning, you know, when we started having the two-party systems of whichever party those were. But I think the thing that's more aggravating for certainly people in our district, the 1st District is, and around the country, is when Republicans are fighting amongst themselves, and we can't get anything done. I think that, you know, that extends down to the state capitol as well. The narrative has been, give us control and we'll govern and we'll get things, you know, we'll get America back on track, we'll get the state back on track, and neither has happened.
Yeah.
And people are immensely frustrated, and, you know, it has the potential, if they don't get something done, that, you know, this checks and balances will change again, and we'll have Nancy Pelosi as our new House of Representatives leader come next year.
Yeah,
and we got to get smart.
And you can say what you want about Nancy, and I'll refrain from commenting other than say that she has proven that she can get something done. So
she has, but, you know, the Democrat Party has always been lockstep. You know, it's almost like the lemurs. You know, they'll go off the cliff together.
Yeah.
And whether you like that or not, they've always been in lockstep and not deviated much from their strategy and their narrative. And we as Republicans, it's kind of like on your blog or whatever just came before on the radio that said that, you know, we have a group of people, not enough to get something passed, like the health care on the Republican side. So that group moves together, and then there's a few on either side that want their only way, and so we end up with nothing.
Yeah. And on the healthcare battle, and I'm sure that as at least a candidate and current observer of what's going on, it's frustrating to, I think, a lot of the general public, whether you want change or simply interested in what's going on, that everybody wants to do something about it, but there are, you know, 35 different flavors of do something about it, and nobody can agree on, well, let's at least talk about this one. So it is frustrating.
I think more so even than a candidate, it was actually somebody who has employees, over 400 employees. As I look at this every day, I was just in a meeting with a group of folks talking about this very issue. It's that, you know, you just anticipate something happening to unleash the ability to continue to create jobs and other job creators out there, and just the enormous cost that it has on a system. And the sad thing about all of this is that the individuals, many of the individuals that are actually paying this, the younger generation, they don't want it. But they still have to pay it because the penalties are the same or more than what they would be paying for their part of their insurance program if they're either on the exchange or with their employer. And so we have people that are in the system that are spending money that they could otherwise engage in a community, spend money as disposable income, that are paying for insurance in their mind that they'll never need till they get older. And the whole purpose of this is to subsidize the program for you know, as we get older and the aging population. So it's just, it's not a free market principle that this country was founded on. You know, we don't, you know, the really the closest thing we have to that is Senator Cruz and Mike Lee proposal, where you have, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield and Aetna, somebody like that, that offers the full plan, that can offer a menu of plans that a person can go actually say, okay, I want that coverage for that cost. And that's really choice. That's really about, you know, giving a person the opportunity to buy something they can use for preventative medicine if you're younger and you're not on your parents' plan, and that you can sort of, as you get a family or you get married and get a family, you can move your plan upwards. But, you know, when we're charging maternity, you know, creating maternity procedures for folks that are beyond their fertility stage, just doesn't make sense.
Well, and I think as we look at just the word insurance, whether it's health insurance, car insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance, whatever, in all other forms that I'm aware of, you have the option to buy, I want to buy X amount of coverage, or I want to buy this option but not that option. And at least under the current mandate, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all. This is the approved policy.
Well, and I think along with that, Charlie, you know, a lot of the problem is with our legislators is that, and I'm speaking as a business person, you know, when we have folks that are protecting their job, I mean, I'm not, you know, that I probably, that's blasphemy to say that, I'm sure. But the reality is that when you have the CBO score something, you're going to lose, you know, the numbers change, 23, 30, you know, 15 million, they're going to go off Obamacare. You know, the narrative is actually now starting to come out where, well, you're not going to be kicked off. The people, when they don't have the individual mandate, are not actually going to buy it. So it's true, they're going to leave, but not because of something that we did in a sense that we're forcing people off the plan. They're actually making a choice to get off the plan because they didn't think they needed to begin with, and now that it's not forced upon them as a penalty that shows up on their tax return every January, February, March, they're just not going to buy it. And we're going to go back to the process before, because the reality is, you know, these kind of plans have been around for a long time, more like Blue Cross Blue Shield has offered a skinny down plan for a broader base of hourly employees. I mean, we had one for 15 years, and, you know, it was $38 a month, gave you $3,000 a year in coverage. You had preventative opportunities. You had Delta Dental, same dental plan and providers as others. But it was $38 a month, and unless somebody actually, many people would not take it because they didn't think they needed it, even at $38. So we just got to get choice back in and give the option and flexibility to people to pick the plan, to your point, that they need and want to pay for.
Well, and I think I don't want to belabor this point. I'll make one option that you can comment on or not, and then we'll take a break and move on. But it's also, I think, a matter of the fact that this is a one-size-fits-all, and therefore you have no choice of, gee, all I really want is a bare-bones plan so that I can get my prescriptions filled and pay for my dental and pay for my doctor's office, and I can, you know, live with some higher deductibles on some of these other things. But because the Obamacare plan blew up the underwriting charts and all the actuarial data that went with it, the companies who are for-profit companies had a lot of trouble setting rates and realized it was going to cost them more, and premiums are still going up. So, you know.
Yeah, and just talking to some of the people with the larger insurance companies, you know, there was a subsidy that the government offered some of these larger insurance companies early on to take these losses in order to make this transition. And it's my understanding, I haven't gone back and, you know, personally checked all their balance sheets, but they have some significant accounts receivables from the federal government for some of those subsidies that have never been paid, you know, to the tune of billions of dollars. And so, you know, this is problematic all the way around, from the technology requirements to get everybody on the same medical record system across the country, to what it's done to rural hospitals, you know, to what it's done to provider and you know, the payment of providers based on transparency of the processes. There's a lot. You know, when you have a bill that Nancy Pelosi said you had to read it, you know, pass it before you read it, and it's 2,700 pages long, and we're trying to undo it, that tells you in and of itself how complicated and how overreaching it is. And then you have, you know, a couple of Republican plans recently. The one's, you know, 123 pages, and the other, you know, who knows what the Senate's going to be yet, but, you know, the Republican plan, I think, was 123 pages. You know, it doesn't seem like it can be that simple to unwind, and we're finding out that it's really not.
Exactly. We're talking with Kevin Hearn, candidate for the 1st District Congressional seat, and we will continue in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Continuing our time with candidate for the 1st Congressional District seat, Kevin Hearn. And Kevin, a news item came out, midday yesterday, I don't remember exactly, but Oklahoma Insurance Commissioner John Doak came out with an endorsement for your candidacy. The quote that I have in front of him, that he's proud to endorse Kevin Hearn for the seat. He says, you are the right man for the right job at the time. We need a conservative, business-minded leader who has the know-how to take the power back from the federal government and return it to the people. Doak says he's excited about supporting you because you have the understanding to untangle the health care insurance mess with a free market solution. Listeners can say what they want about endorsements, but it is, to me, third-party evidence that someone has evaluated your candidacy and is willing to stand beside you.
Commissioner Doak is, thank you, Charlie, yes, and Commissioner Doak has done a great job. You know, as we talk about state issues, you know, his agency here in the state, his office, is one that's been a contributor back to the state budget, been very efficient and a great example as a, you know, businessman, as an insurance agent with State Farm, I believe, State Farm, that came, and did the job as the insurance commissioner. He's a person that does a lot of due diligence before he would make this endorsement, and he and I have been talking for a number of months now through this process, you know, what it was going to look like, and me sharing with him my background, not only as a business owner across multiple businesses, but also in my work as the chief financial officer for the McDonald's franchisees across the country, and my interactions going all the way back to 2009 with the Obama healthcare plan and implementation, and my time that I spend on both our workers' comp board, self-insured board, but I also sit on an international insurance board that does mutual insurance. So, I understand the insurance process and what it does. And Commissioner Doak's one that wants to make sure that we send people to D.C. to work on things that are near and dear to his heart, that have the experience and the know-how to actually fix something.
Well, it's so, no, I think that, thank you very much for the comment, and on that, I think it's appropriate. But this just kind of, I guess, as your candidacy starts to develop, as we get closer to whenever the election is going to be, it's important that issues come in front of the public, and sometimes they come from, you know, third parties, and sometimes it's the things that you or some other candidate has brought up. So I wanted to make sure that we got Commissioner Doak's endorsement out there in front of the public, so they had the opportunity to, you know, evaluate what he had for themselves. Thank you very much. Other Oklahoma issues, as you work to represent the 1st District, there are a lot of other things going on that we could talk about, and I just want to open up for other issues. We have about 6 or 7 minutes left to go. What's on your heart other than Obamacare and other than this particular endorsement from the commissioner?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see what the narrative coming out of Washington, D.C. is with President Trump. Not only has he, you know, pushed an economic agenda, and you look at what's happened with job creation of, you know, or 800,000 jobs since he's taken office, and what he's talked about with social issues, which I think has sort of been the real shock for most Americans, what he did with the Johnson Amendment and easing the IRS's ruling on what they can and cannot do with churches, I think has a tremendous impact in our part of the country. I think the recent tweet out yesterday was probably a shocker to most everyone, and certainly welcome from, I know, the first district, that this is huge. I've had the opportunity to meet several pastors and was actually sitting in a meeting with a pastor yesterday whenever the tweet came out that, you know, he was disallowing transgender in the military. You know, I think that's one that we really need to understand, and I think the longer that President Trump is in office, he is understanding. I know of what his comments were during the campaign trail last year in the summer, but I think what he's also realized that, to some of his words, is that the military is not a place for social experiments. And I know that that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but the reality is, if you get even beyond that in the transgender issue, and I think it gets down to the fundamental issue that, you know, I know is near and dear to the hearts of folks in Oklahoma, that if you truly believe that this country, you know, well, humanity was created by God, that, you know, in Genesis 1:27, it clearly says that, you know, God created man and woman. And, you know, you continue that narrative, and it goes to the moral decay of a country that one, you know, doesn't like to talk about, but the realities are there. And I know that you know, there's a lot of people in the district that have talked about that with our churches, with our universities, especially Dr. Everett Piper, on the regards of what's happened to the moral decay and, you know, man thinking that they're God and making godly decisions, quote, end quotes, for their own selves. And I think what President Trump found is that there are some other issues when he talked to his generals and his military leaders that the military wasn't a place to do this. And so I think many, myself included, applaud that decision.
Well, and I think,
so I think that's fascinating.
And I'm trying to read into the minds of the generals, and I have not heard their comments. This is strictly my interpretation. The military traditionally, historically, has been slow to change. As far as, when I first enlisted, as soon as a female member of the military got pregnant, she was immediately discharged because it was something that the military was not equipped for. We have, you know, moved on from that and other things, but it's been an organization that is slow to adapt change, and certainly at this point in time, I think many of the generals could have said this is simply too fast. So, you know.
Well, yeah. I think you're exactly right, and I think it's quickly gone to, well, Americans hate homosexuals, hate transgenders, and that's not the case. I mean, God teaches us all to, you know, hate the sin, love the sinner, and so I think it's in that same narrative. I think that when it puts other you know, narratives in harm's way, or the interactions. And to your point, you know, who knows where this is going to be in another decade to 20 years from now. But right now, I think President Trump, in review of his current military leaders, made a decision based on their input that they felt that it was more detrimental to the morale of the military than it was going to be beneficial to society as a whole. And they made the decision to do what they did. And that's been a big talk around certainly the First District and just in my interactions yesterday alone.
Well, and if you were to get an assignment to one of the committees that has to do with military funding, military affairs, defense committees, this is something that potentially you might have to weigh in on if you got the seat after the next election.
Absolutely. This is not over. Won't be over. As much as, you know, we have a major fiscal issue in this country, the social issues will always be the foundation of everything that we talk about and do, because their direct impact on the people. So there will never be a shortage of an opinion, of an idea, of a thought, of a justification for any of the social issues that we have. And one will need to be, that goes to D.C. to represent this district, will need to be steadfast in their beliefs and not waver on those beliefs as they're representing the district.
The next problem that Congress likely will take up, in my opinion, will be some form of tax policy, tax reform, tax restructuring, however you want to word it. In the short time that we've got left, Kevin, how would you weigh in on how the House should vote on tax reform?
Yeah, I spent 5.5 years on the Gauss Corporation tax policy team, which was the interaction of all federal policymakers. So they actually started out with the camp. He was chair of the Ways and Means, and over at Paul Ryan. You know, this is a lot more complicated. It's much like the health care plan, except it's been more ingrained with special interests. And I think you have to start, you know, if you go back to the 1986 tax plan, it was about lowering the rates, broadening the base. That narrative is still going to be in place today. there, you know, every tax deal that's out there, every benefit that's out there has a constituency around it, whether it's the mortgage interest deduction, whether it's state income tax deductions. So you're going to have to go through and look at each one of those and create a plan. You know, part of this plan is to have the $900 billion tax impact on the Obamacare return to the citizens. And, you know, who knows where that's going to come in at. But it's very complicated, and you know, it's one of those that we're going to need to have somebody go there, you know, as myself, that's actually worked on tax policy ideas and for C-Corps, for pass-through entities, for individual rates. And I had the opportunity last Monday to speak to Steve Mnuchin and regarding this whole idea. And I like what I'm hearing from the standpoint of corporations, which have always had, has been the big media talk for the last 2 years about the inequity of the 35% rate the corporations are having to pay versus a 15 or a 10 in some other country. And then the whole conversation about repatriation and whether that should be a 10, 15, 20, 17.5% rate versus what an individual, which many people in America are, passive entities, which they're either LLCs or S-Corps, they were just being taxed at the personal rate. And so what Mnuchin was saying was that those small businesses, whatever the corporate rate is for C-corporations, major corporations, that same rate would apply to small business. And, you know, the one thing he did qualify it by is we don't want individuals, you know, Charlie Turbelletti becoming an LLC, so he could take care, you know, take advantage of that tax rate. So there's some work to do in that area, but it sort of brings small business and big business on the same playing, same level of playing field as it relates to tax rates, which is huge, because in the past, that's really been determined based on the banks of the tax accountants and tax attorneys that a major corporation had access to versus small business. So just that in of itself, I think, will really excite the job creators. And they're going to need a lot of, you know, input on that from small business people around the country.
Okay. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for your time. I want to point people to your website, an opportunity for them to find out more about your positions, to find out more about your fundraising opportunities. And I don't know that you post all of your public appearances, but again, an opportunity simply for them to connect with you and find out more about you and how you might lead them for the first district.
Absolutely. It's Hern for Congress, H-E-R-N. forcongress.com, and you can link up there and see about me and my story and have the opportunity to volunteer. I'd love to see as many people out there as possible as we go around the district. We'll be back in Bartlesville next week, so I look forward to seeing folks in that area.
All right. Thank you very much. Opportunity for us to spend some time this morning with candidate for the 1st District Congressional seat, Kevin Hern, on a Community Connection. Our Community Connection brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church.
At Quick Lane at Dungeness Ford, we're ready to serve, especially when it comes